Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we are focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Drive On podcast. Today, my guest is Dustin Hayes. Dustin is a veteran who has found his way into entrepreneurship through various ups and downs in his life, pre, post-military. And he's currently the founder and owner of Red, White, and Badass Brew, a coffee company offering fresh roasted coffee from around the world. So welcome to the show, Dustin. I'm glad to have you on.
All right, Scott. Thank you. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell us a little bit more about yourself and your background.
Yeah. You know, I grew up in Oklahoma, Yukon, Oklahoma. You know, it was a mid-sized town, around 9,000 people, nothing too crazy, you know, and that just depends on where you live. You might think that's a small town, or you might think that's a huge town. So grew up, you know, normal childhood, nothing crazy, you know, playing in creeks and stuff like that, and went addicted to technology. And kind of grew up, and it was actually just me and my father. So me and my dad, you know, were just, it was it. And my grandparents had a ranch out in Norman, Oklahoma, you know, so Boomer Sooners, you know, I always have to give a shout out to Boomer right. Sooners, you know, the Sooners on my team. And we just kind of a normal childhood till I kind of hit high school. And then high school, I really discovered, before high school, I discovered girls. And then high school, I was just like, wow, there's even more girls. So I kind of messed around in high school and really didn't even graduate high school. I dropped out, fell 10th grade, and was like, this isn't the life for me. I don't see this going for me very well. So they also diagnosed me with ADHD. And back in, you know, the 90s, they didn't know what to do with kids with ADHD. Like, you know, sit still, you can control it. Like, no, and we're just a little bit different. So went and had really two choices. My dad says, hey, you're either going to work for the company, the construction business my dad owned, or you're going in the military. And I was like, well, I fucking hate construction. So see ya, adios, man. I'm going to the military. So I enlisted in the Navy. And before I could actually join the Navy, I had to get my GED. So got my GED. Also went to a place called Job Corps. Some of you might know it. Some of you might not know it, but it's kind of like a trade school. And so I had to do a minimum of 6 months at Job Corps. So did that. Did my minimum of 6 months and took off for the Navy. And I was aviation explosives fuel halfway for most of my career. And then did that, was on several deployments, you know, had a decent head on my shoulders and was trainable and lifeable and stuff like that. So all my higher ups were like, all right, man, we're training you up. So they sent me on different ships to go get trained. And so I was like an E3 in the military, training E5s and E6s. It was kind of very bizarre trying to tell the E5, E6 what to do and how to do it. Right. You know, and these guys are supposed to be, you know, the expert, subject matter experts. So went from there. Then I went into, got stationed back to Oklahoma in a small operations base. And it was like, all right, you know, I'm going to do this. I'm going to get out, move back to Oklahoma. Two things I realized was Navy doesn't belong in the middle of the United States. And I didn't love Oklahoma any like I did. I love how I grew up. But being stationed in San Diego for most of my career, I was like, get me back to San Diego. At that time, I kind of had enough of the military. So I actually got out, joined the reserves, and then went back to San Diego. And so went back to San Diego, did a couple of things here and there. In the reserves, you know, I stood out because, you know, once you're, you know, a sailor, you know, I'm not just a reserve sailor. It's kind of easy to do the reserve job. So, and you'd have all the, you know, quals and everything else you need, you know, I had to go get trained. So it was very easy for me to land a job. And I ended up landing a job that briefed the CEO every weekend. So I got a lot of one-on-one time with the CEO. And I missed duty one day. And he calls me up and goes, hey, I have this opportunity. And I was like, all right, what kind of opportunity? He's like, got to fly a UAV. You know, my first thought, what the fuck is a UAV? You know, I've never heard of this thing in my life. He's like, well, it's a drone. And I'm like, okay, cool. What's a drone? You know, like, right. So, this is back in, you know, 2007. And I was like, what the hell is a drone? So he, you know, kind of explains to me, and he's just like, oh, it's like playing on, you know, Xbox. And I was like, yeah, that's cool, but I don't play video games. So, and he's just like, well, I think you'd be a great fit for this program. And I was like, yeah, thank you, sir. I appreciate it. But I, you know, what you're telling me is I should not do this job because I'm not qualified to do anything that you're telling me I need to do.
Right.
And so he goes, great, I'll take that as a yes. So I was like, okay, like, Kevin, you're not going to argue.
Right.
So I was like, all right, sir. So ended up getting, you know, qualified, all that. I love talking to pilots because I'll tell a pilot, like, oh, I'm a pilot too. You know, when I fly drones, and man, they just get all, they're like, oh, you're not a real pilot. I'm like, I got my wings. You know, and then went to training. Everything went great. Then we ended up actually kind of get to like a little niche, just a small group of us deploying with the special forces. Ended up being part of JSOC. And if you don't know what JSOC is, Joint Special Operations Command. And so we ended up being part of that. So we deployed with the, you know, the SEALs, MORSOC guys, the ODA guys, and just really kind of had that little more of a high tempo type of job. And we'd actually go out to the field. So it was very unique into the drone world, you know, because people think of drones of, you know, big old Predator. That's not what we flew. We flew a small platform called ScanEagle. So it was just a very small UAV, but very remote driven because I could fly it off a laptop. You know, so they had a hub, they would launch it, and I would pick it up in midstream in the air and go, okay, got it. And I'd be out with the teams doing whatever missions necessary.
So would the majority of your time flying those drones be from like stateside, or would you be, you know, overseas with wherever they are?
Boots on ground.
Boots
on ground. Yeah. And so I flew Afghanistan. That was my, you know, area of operations. It was Afghanistan. So that's where all my flight time was. So yeah, no, your boots on the ground, you're out with the teams, they take over, you know, a compound, you're out there with, so it's very involved, you know, doing that kind of little niche program with those guys.
Right.
And we were one of the kind of the first units to actually do it. Not a whole lot of units did this. And while we're going through the training of the UAV, so we have to go through civilian training first to fly this UAV. And then from civilian training, we had to go and get qualified through the military training. So it was quite a training process. It took probably about 8 months for the training to actually, you know, from start to finish. And then from that time frame, we did pretty much minimal one-year tours.
Okay.
Out in Afghanistan. So
yeah, that's awesome, because I've always wondered like how that works. And I know being an infantryman myself, having eyes in the sky, having air support, having something above you is always a good peace of mind, good comfort to have. So I'm sure those special operations guys also felt very, very good about having that asset in the sky above them, right? But it's cool to hear like how that training program went, and especially how your approach for it, because I think at that time, you know, you were saying, you know, based on what you're saying, sir, I don't think I'm all that qualified. But at that time, I don't know that anyone really was all that qualified to fly one of these things, right?
No, you know, I mean, you know, you got the, you know, lack of better words, you know, gamers out there.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not a gamer. Like, my gaming experience was Mario Kart and Mario Brothers, you know, to play some Call of Duty every once in a while, you know. That was about my extent of gaming. Like, I've never really played any other games besides that. There was definitely, I think, better qualified people. However, I don't think he actually divulged all the information to me. I think we were streamlined for this kind of like special forces unit right from the rip. Because as soon as we went up to the military side, I can't remember the name, but he was an old retired Navy SEAL. He's like, all right, guys, you guys are going to be going out with the units. And, you know, we're like, what the fuck? I'm like, wait a minute, we're doing what?
Right.
You know, and I was like, all right, cool. Yeah, you know, because I wanted to try out to be a SEAL. Just got in trouble a couple times. Sure. That wouldn't let me go forth with that. So I was like, all right, well, I don't know exactly what that means either, but all right, let's have fun. And it was very interesting to mesh with those guys in the field. I mean, you know, these are, you know, doesn't matter what group it was, like, they just kind of looked at you when you first got there, just like an outsider. So you had to like really prove yourself as part of the team. And that was the hardest. I think one of the hardest things is integrating with these guys and showing in. Even still, even though you showed them, hey, man, I'm here to be part of the team. I was very good at flying the UAVs. Actually, it turned out I was pretty damn good at it. And they really had, some of them had a hard time. Some of them never even spoke a word to me.
Right.
You know, being out there, and they're just like, hey, this guy, he's a nobody. He's not part of us. He's not part of the brotherhood. Then the other guys were like, hey, dude, thanks for having, having you on board, man, and, helping us out, because Eyes and Sky are awesome asset. And that's what we did at ISR, intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance.
Yeah, absolutely. I can definitely attest to having some sort of eyes in the sky. That's always a good thing to have. I don't think it matters what branch or what, the mission is. I think if you're out there and you can have extra assets that are on your side, it's a good thing. And
usually that especially, helpy, huh?
Yeah, exactly. So let's fast forward a bit. So you, you got out of the active duty, you're in the reserves.
Yeah.
So I'm imagining that's the part-time, the 1 week in a month, 2 weeks a year, or is that kind of a...
It was a part-time,
Part-time deal. So what were you doing on the civilian side outside of that?
So I was actually the director for several high-rise, for security for several high-rise buildings downtown in San Diego.
Okay.
So I oversaw, was it four buildings?
Okay.
And then did that for just a short bit. I wasn't in the reserves long. I mean, you're supposed to be I think non-deployable for 2 years. That didn't happen. I was like, all right. I mean, there's probably people in the reserves that have never deployed. But I was just like, boom, picked up and gone.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a interesting topic. So I did that for a bit. And then when I got picked up for the UAV, pretty much I was back on active duty the whole time. So I went back to active duty. Then I ended up getting hurt while I was in Afghanistan. And that ultimately ended my military career. I was in 13 and a half years.
Sure.
And that kind of changed the course of my life, because, at that time I was like, man, I'm going to stay in the military. I want to finish out my time, do my 20. Now I was like, I don't know what's going on with my life. Now I'm on, in the, med hold department at Balboa. And I'm like, I don't even know what is going to happen. And so took about 2 years to kind of get, I wasn't even fully recovered. And they were like, all right, it's time for you to go. I was still having major issues. And they're like, yeah, you've been here long enough, 2 years. So we're going to retire you out and good luck. And I was like, all right, now what do I do with life? You got the, when you get out, you have TAPS and all that stuff. And I don't even remember if I even went to TAPS then. I don't even think it was like that. It was just like, process you out and see you later. And you're just like, I don't even know. And I had a wife and three kids at the time. My last deployment, my third child, my youngest daughter was born. And I didn't see her until she was 7 months. My arm. And then I didn't see her for another 6 months. So she was already crawling when I saw her the first time and walking the second time.
Yeah.
But then, so I got out, had several issues. I didn't really had a hard time coping with, getting out, kind of reintegrating back into society a little bit, blaming everybody and just, it's everybody's fault, not my fault, blah, blah, blah. Which it wasn't my fault. It was nobody's fault. It's just the hand that I was dealt. So I went to counseling and, got my head right. Got me back in the mindset of, hey, this is just a different life. Nothing's changed. You're still Dustin. You just change a little bit. Now you just have some new limitations. That's it. And what they taught me was I define the limitations. Not the injuries define my limitations. I define those limitations.
Right.
So that's what I did. And I was like, all right. So I did what everybody else does is like, well, I need income and I don't know how to apply for a job really. And the job I got while I was in the reserves was just kind of almost handed to me, just knew somebody. So I was like, well, I'm going to go back to college. So I went back to college, really had no anticipation to really graduate. I was just like, I need money. The retirement's definitely not enough to live here in San Diego. And so I did. So I went back to college. A good buddy of mine hired me on as kind of a part-time handyman, so I worked alone most of the time or with him or with one of his other workers. So did that. And while I was doing that, my son was playing football and one of the other son's fathers started talking to me about construction. And I was like, man, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to work construction. Then it kind of dawned on me, like, I'm doing that anyway. I'm doing electrical work, concrete work, painting, you know, like a general handyman. I'm like, I'm doing that anyway. You know, getting paid a little bit of money, not much at all. So, you know, he told me about the Disabled Veteran Business Enterprise being certified at that in the state of California. So I did my research and I was like, well, you know what? I'm going to open up my own construction company. So at the time I was like, well, I'm going to need somebody in the field who really can, you know, help me out with this. I think I'm a decent business acumen because of my father. And so at the time I was married to my second wife and her dad was in the concrete field. So her dad had been in the concrete industry for 42 years, superintendent, has ran many crews. So the guy who introduced me to the certificate, to the DVBE program and to get certified, also owned a construction business. And he's like, hey, you know, let's talk about you getting certified and you coming over to my business and I'll give you some ownership in the business and we can work something out. And I was like, well, I don't know this guy very well. And why would I go make him money when I could just open up my own construction business? You know, the hard knock mindset, I guess. Like, it would have been a lot easier if I just would have went with this guy who already was doing 2 or 3 million and just getting certified. But I've never taken that easy approach. So I was like, you know, declined. I was like, no, that's okay. So I asked my father, well, hey, you want to go in business? And he goes, yeah, I do. So we opened up our concrete business August 3rd of 2015. Actually, we opened up before that, really. We were just doing work on the side and, you know, doing some advertising, you know, just trying to get some funds raised and stuff like that. But I'm still going to college at this time too. So now I'm going to college. I'm starting this business. And me and my wife just had in April of 2014, had another kid. So in college, had another kid, and then started this concrete business. And, you know, so it was a lot going on in 2015. And so we did do very well. You know, we didn't have really any money to start with. He was broke. I was broke. Barely can rub two nickels to, you know, to make a dollar. And, you know, one slip and we're like, man, we can't pay a bill this month type of thing, paycheck to paycheck. So I got really creative of how I'm going to start this business. And I just went out and found all the free resources I could possibly find. And I just found it. Just Facebook was free at that time to promote. Craigslist was huge, a huge, huge pinnacle in us starting a business because I was just on Craigslist every single morning before we go out, boom, boom, and post concrete work, concrete block walls. And I mean, I did almost $125,000. Just off of Craigslist from August to end of December of 2015.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was pretty lucrative.
So that's like that hustle mindset that you got to have. You can't just sit around waiting for that phone to ring, expecting that, you know, I'm offering this service and it's a great service. Someone's going to pick up the phone because they found me magically somehow. Like, no, you're out there and you're taking advantage of all these resources, right? All these free resources at the time that were available and getting your name out there and letting people know, hey, this is where you're going to come and find someone to do this concrete work or, you know, whatever.
100%, right? 100%. You know, first, website. Second, I put that business on everything I can get my hands on for free. If it's AngieList, I can make a free account, I'm doing it. Because that's just more things that's going to tie me into my website. And somebody sees the same name of this concrete business. It was ProVet Concrete at the time. They're going to go and seek it out. And that's how 95% of my transactions happen. Well, I shouldn't say 95%. But when I first started, that's how they happened. And then I also, after work, I would go and do events. I would go to the Chamber of Commerce events. So I highly recommend people who are starting a business go to the Chamber of Commerce events. If you have more than one in your surrounding area, go to them. Networking is a huge plus. I also found a nonprofit called Veterans in Business Network. They were a huge part of me in 2016 being successful because I got kind of in bed with those guys as they just started their nonprofit. And they highly promoted me. And they've got me in touch with all the government agencies that I wanted to work for and got me in front of. You know, so you really have to hit that hustle mindset. You can't sit there and just make a website and go, all right, now all these people are going to come to me. That does not work. If that's your mindset, you're going to crash, you're going to burn, you're going to fail.
Yeah, that's the field of dreams mindset. If you build it, they will come kind of thing, right? And that is not the case in...
Only in movies.
Right, exactly. It's the movie mindset. That's something Hollywood made up and, you know, they put it out there and got that in your mind, the back of your head. Like, okay, if I just have this kick-ass website with all of my products or services or whatever it is that you do, right? And you put it out there, people are just going to... The phone's going to be ringing off the hook. I'm not going to be able to stop getting customers, right? Well, you and everybody else who's out there is doing the same exact thing. So you got to do something to differentiate yourself, get yourself in front of these people. And you mentioned networking, and that's something that I found early on in my career, that you go out and you do this networking. And I would do it to the point where I felt like I was starting to get burnt out, where I was going to all these different networking events. Every week there was different events that were going on, sometimes 2-3 times a week. And I'd be going to all of them in our industry. And I'd be meeting people and talking to people and everything. And after the first few months, like, I wasn't getting any business from these networking events, right? But the more you go, the more you stay top of mind with people. And sometimes, like in your case, Concrete, right? Like, I don't need anybody to do Concrete work right now. So I might meet you and be like, oh, cool. You know, nice to meet you. Glad you're doing well and everything, you know, whatever. And then 6 months from now, I might need Concrete work, right? But if you don't keep going to these things and staying top of mind with me, I'm probably going to forget you in 6 months, right? Within that networking concept, right? So you kind of have to keep going to these things, staying top of mind, making these relationships with people, even helping other people out. So that way they're like, oh yeah, you know, that guy's a good guy. You know, he made that connection with me when I was looking for an accountant. He hooked me up with his accountant, or, you know, whatever, you know, those types of things. And you build those relationships, and that's how you start to grow your business. I mean, that's how, you know, you start to meet people, and they may not even necessarily be the customers that you're going for, but they might know people in their network who then they're like, hey, you know what? I met this awesome guy, Dustin, at this networking event. But let me hook you up with him. He does Concrete, and he's exactly the type of person that you're looking for, right? Like, that's how the networking works. It's a long game. You're not going there. Yeah, you're not going there to a networking event and expecting to come home with 5 new clients at the end of that night.
I have never, ever had that happen. Ever.
Right.
I have never sat there, shook somebody's hand, met him first time and says, yep, come do my Concrete. Never have had that happen. People expect that. Like, oh, I'm going to go to this one event, and I'm going to get 50 clients. It's nope. What you said. You hit the nail on the head. It's about networking, building a relationship, because they're really not buying the Concrete. They're buying you.
Yeah.
That's what exactly they're going to be doing. You're really selling yourself. That was something I didn't know. I'm not a salesman. I can't sell a puddle of water to a, you know, dying camel. I can't. I'm just not a natural salesman, but I can talk. I can, you know, articulate with people. I can have a general conversation and then filter in some, you know, some business.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of the hardest things I've had in all my businesses is closing. I'm not a closer. I go up to anybody and talk to them. Matter of fact, I can go talk to a wall, you know, and need to get a response back. But closing that wall on some fresh new paint, I can't do it.
Right.
You know, so it's been very unique. The events, all the, put it this way, I went to a construction event in 2016 and met with a lady named Deanna from SART Construction. And she, you know, I would try to go, yeah, give me your $1 million project, because, you know, everybody wants a big payday. So I started actually kind of changing my mindset, because people are like, well, I'm going to give you $1 million. Like, I don't even know you. How do I know you can handle $1 million project?
Sure. Yeah.
So then I started changing my mindset. I was like, hey, give me your smallest project. If it's replacing two panels on a sidewall, give it to me. Let me show you what I could do. You know, I mean, that's easy day. I mean, everything's already set. It's two panels of the sidewall. All the elevations are there. You know, so it's like, all right, easy day. You know, and then that's how I started building it. So now approach it from a different perspective. don't go for the big payday. Go for the small ones and then build yourself up, because as you get that trust, they're going to hand you one. So then I did a couple of small projects for them. I helped them out in a bind. And I ended up doing a project for them for a middle school here in San Diego. And it was a $450,000 project. You know, so.
And that's the mindset too. And I love that you mentioned that, because when you get, I don't want to say greedy, right? That I don't like that term as far as this goes, right? But when you get too aspirational, maybe, and you're just jumping for that big project, you want to sink your teeth into that $1 million project right off the bat. You hit the nail on the head when you said, they don't know you. They don't know what you can do. Can you even handle a $1 million project? Is it just you and your concrete and you're the only person doing this? Like, you're not going to be able to handle a $1 million project on your own. You know, who are you? What can you do? You come out there, you do that small project, and they see, okay, well, this guy's legit. He's got maybe a crew that's working with him, and he's got the system in place, and he's doing this, and he got the job done. Cool. Okay, well, let's move you up to the next biggest thing, right? It's almost, let's take it back to your situation in the military where you're like, I don't even play video games, right? Well, it's almost like a video game, right? The first level is always pretty easy. Like, that's how they hook you in, right? And then the next level gets a little harder and harder and harder, and you get to the end, and you're battling like the end, like monster dude at the end, right?
Yep.
That's fucking hard. But when you get done, like, that's the big payday. Like, okay, I accomplished something, right? And so, you know, that's how that mindset's got to work. You got to be willing to do that grind and really hustle in order to get to those big paydays, right?
And stay to it. And not to mention that Sunk Construction does their own concrete. So they self-perform their own concrete, and they're calling on this guy, a veteran-owned company, to come do concrete for them.
Right.
You know, so and it wasn't a small project. It was a huge undertaking, the project was, because it was in middle of the school year and young kids running around, so you can only work at certain times. It was a huge undertaking, a huge trust. I have built enough trust with them to sit there and them go, okay, you know what? He's done enough for us. We're going to give him the show. So in 2016, it was me and my father-in-law who started the company. And then in 2016, we brought a third owner on because his expertise. We need another person with some specific expertise, and that's estimating and stuff like that. So we brought him on, and everything was going okay. We actually built the company from $700,000 to roughly about $1.7 million in that first year. And then fast forward 2017, I ended up getting divorced. So it happens. You know, 2018, my father-in-law ended up by getting lung cancer and ended up passing away. So then it was left with me and my other business partner. Me and him did get along a whole lot, you know, kind of butted heads quite a bit. And, you know, Larry was my father-in-law, would kind of meld things, you know, between us, because he didn't quite understand the mindset I had and I didn't understand the mindset he had. And so it was kind of souring. So we're trying to, you know, keep this relationship going and all that. Well, fast forward to about October 2020. I found out that we're going through these projects and, you know, things weren't going on as they should in the field. I started realizing we're getting behind on projects and getting behind on money, and everything's kind of going south. And I'm like, why is everything kind of going south? So I'm trying to figure it out. Communications with the projects he had just kind of dropped off a little bit. Wasn't paying attention to really detail. Well, it comes to light that he actually started another company behind my back. So in October 2020, one of my suppliers calls me. He's like, hey, I'm getting, you know, anyway, he was getting information from my partner for a different company. And I was like, yep, don't know anything about it. Send me an email. So that's how I found out he started another company behind my back. Well, the choices he made up to that point made it impossible for me to recover. Now we have lost hundreds of thousands of dollars in profits, and jobs are behind schedule. And so now it's almost impossible for me to get this back to a point of recovery. And in February 2021, we closed business. Yeah, you know, we were doing about $5.6 million in those years. So we're no small business. I mean, we're a small business, but doing okay.
Doing good.
Yeah, we're doing good. But it was unrecoverable. Couldn't recover from it and close it down. The funny part is I actually never wanted to be a construction. My dad was in it. I saw the ebbs and flows with it. I hated it. So at 20, I just stick with it because it was really good money. I mean, it really is. And I had a very good knack for project managing, and I was a pretty decent estimator. So I had a knack for it, but it just wasn't, I didn't love it. You know, I didn't wake up every day excited. You know, like I was every day like, man, you know, I'm not following my dreams here, but the money was good. So sometimes the money outweighs those dreams. So we closed the business down. At that point, we both of us put our houses up on our for line of credit. We are unable to pay it. So now I have the bank knocking on my door going, hey, how are you going to pay this back? And we have our houses. So we're kind of tight. So at that point, I was like, well, what am I going to do? So I opened up a solar cleaning, window cleaning, gutter insulation business in the meantime. So opened that up. I was about 4 months into it, 5 months into it, doing really well because, again, I had developed that pipeline. And I've already opened one business. I know kind of the roadmap to make it successful is networking, getting yourself out there, putting yourself out there. And so it was a lot faster of a turnaround than the first business. I ended up getting stuck on one of the roofs because of I got dizzy. I got dizzy on the roof and I couldn't quite get down. So I was up there for about an hour just before I can even get down. It was a sugar box style house. So the roof, one roof angle was like pitched like 45 degrees or more. And the other one was more flat, but it was on the 2-story side. And I didn't have my ladder on the more flat side and I couldn't because of porch cover. So I went up that real steep angle, which was no problem. I ended up staying on that roof for about an hour. Then I got myself down and then I was like, man, what? That was weird. Well, I was going to go get a tattoo on my back covered up. And the tattoo artist goes, hey, you really need to go get these spots on your back checked out. He goes, they look funky. And I was like, what? Like, what the hell does this guy know? You know? And I was like, well, he does look at skin all day. So maybe he's onto something. So made the appointment, went and got it checked out. And sure enough, it was some possible mild to severe cancerous spots. So they ended up cutting them out, several spots out of my back. And then the doc was like, you can't do your job for 8 weeks. And she's like, if you do your job, you're ripping all the sutures out because they went deep back. Like they like soldered like the bottom end of the, where they cut it out. Then they sewed the middle part and then the top part, like they went fairly deep. I was like, wow, okay. So I was sitting there and about 2 weeks into it, two people didn't know each other came up and was like, hey, I started talking about my business. And they're like, have you ever thought about selling it? I was like, well, no. So end up making a deal with one of them and selling the business. You know, so now I was like, I didn't know what I'm going to do with my life. Like,
right.
What am I going to do? You know, so I'm like twirling my thumbs. I'm down. I can't work. So as I was sipping on Starbucks, I was like, man, this coffee is just garbage. And so I was like, start researching coffee. Just out of the blue, just started researching. I was like, yeah, I know I could do better. And started researching coffee and then opened up a kind of a, I went to a roaster, taught me kind of how to roast. And then I was like, Dave Arm, now you taught me, now you're in trouble. So opened up a business, but I kind of underestimated my business plan. I did a business plan, did everything you're supposed to do. I opened up a business, but my budget was not big enough to get the space, get the equipment. And all that good stuff. And I was, you know, about $35,000, $40,000 shy. And I was like, looked at my bank account like, yep, it's not there.
Right.
Now scratching my head. And so what I ended up doing is collaborating with a roaster who already owned a facility. And I was like, boom, got it. You know, so now I don't have the overhead. And now I get to do exactly what I wanted to do. Did that. And very quickly, he did let me ask some questions. You know, because I'm very like, you know, he's kind of new. Like, so I'm asking everything. Like, what's this doing? He's just like, hey, dude, this ain't working out. You're asking too many questions.
Right.
Like, what? He's just like, yeah, you got to find somewhere else. And I have orders to fill. And so I developed my own, the coffee that I have. It's called Whiskey Business. And I was like, man, I don't even know what am I going to do now? Like, I have to get these out in 48 hours. You know, or else I have to give these guys money back. So now I'm scrambling and I'm rushing. I'm running all over the place trying to find a place. And end up finding another place. And the person's freaking awesome. And to this day, that's exactly how I run the business. And so that hurdle was, you know, probably the biggest hurdle, not the biggest hurdle. Actually, that's a lie. That was just one of the hurdles starting this business. I've never done coffee. I've always just been a consumer. I've never been a barista, never been a roaster, never been anything. All brand new world. Never had an e-commerce store. Never, you know, so it was all just new, a brand new adventure. And it was just hard from getting the website up because I was like, no, I don't want to do a Shopify. I want to do something that's just more unique and, you know, badass, which I wish I just went with Shopify. Yeah, because it's going back to these guys who are gamers are more technology savvy than I am. And people are like, oh, WordPress is easy. And I'm like, for you, it's easy. For me, no.
Yeah, it's so funny that you mentioned that because my whole career so far has been built on building sites like yours and working with WordPress, working with, I'm imagining you're using WooCommerce as the shopping cart on there. And you know, I didn't even look at the site too closely to figure that out. But you know, when you mentioned WordPress, like I knew exactly what you're doing with it. And like, that's my end of things. And so, you know, like if the two of us were to like kind of mesh together, like we probably could have just nailed this out and it would have been, you know, that network, right?
Yep.
You get to know these people, right? Maybe the first networking event you went to, you might have met somebody who, like me, you know, did websites and did all that kind of stuff. And at the time, you're like, okay, well, I'm in construction, whatever. I don't need that level of, you know, e-commerce functionality or whatever on a website. So, yeah, yeah, it's great that you do that, but, you know, it's not really for me. But now, fast forward a few years, you're like, holy crap, there's that dude that I met, you know, way back when. I can probably give him a call. He probably can help me out with this stuff, right? That's that networking that we're talking about. And, you know, it's awesome to see also I want to go back a little bit to what you were saying about that hustle where you had that guy who's roasting the coffee and then was like, you know what, you got to go find someplace else. And you had orders to fill within the next 48 hours and you still figured it out. You managed to get that stuff done. And that's not the easiest thing, especially when you're sitting there, you got all these other things in your business that you're trying to figure out too. And now you got to figure out, where's my product coming from? Like, that's a pretty huge deal, right? Yep. And so, you know, hats off to you on that. But I think more importantly is looking at just how flexible you've been in your post-military career, as far as the different types of jobs that you've worked on and the businesses that you've worked with, as far as the concrete and construction and the solar and all that other stuff that you were doing. And then now you're in coffee. Like, none of those, like if you were to draw like a, you know, one of those charts with the circles overlapping and stuff, they're like not even touching each other. They're so far apart, right?
Yep.
And you know, and here you are just diving in, taking over this coffee with your kind of just diving in with your attitude of, this isn't going to fail. Like, I'm just going to keep working at this and just knock it out of the park. And here you are, right?
That's it. You know, when I started actually each of these businesses, it's funny that you mentioned that. I probably had more people tell me I was going to fail than I had people tell me succeed or pat me on the back and say good luck.
Yeah.
They're just like, what? You're going to fail. And I'm just like, yeah. But then, you know, I also went back and looked at those people and all those people who said, you're going to fail. Probably right if they did it. They probably would.
Yeah.
Because they're employees. These aren't people who ever owned a business, ran a business, started a business. These are all people who work for somebody else. And, you know, it's important that it's okay to listen to people if they say you're going to fail. It's perfectly okay. Matter of fact, I like it when people tell me I'm going to fail more than people tell me I'm going to succeed, because it's like, well, I'm a big boy cast today and let me prove you wrong. Because then when you succeed, they're just like, damn, he did it again. A couple of my close friends have been really astonished. I'm not like been astonished with me about how when I put my mind to something, I do it. I don't talk about it a lot. I'm like, yep, I think I'm going to do this. Like the coffee guy business, like a couple of my buddies are like, close buddies are like, damn, that's a good idea. You know, like, you know, but that's a hard business. So I was like, yeah. And then within a week, they're like, she already opened a business. You know, yeah. But hey, if I'm talking about it, that means because I'm probably already going to be doing it.
Right. That's the shit or get off the pot mentality. Like, you're going to do it or you're not. Like, pick one. but you can't have it both ways, right?
Exactly. That's exactly it. You know, it. Yeah, you can. It's, you could talk about it. I talk about this to people who are, I always find people who are like, I want to be an entrepreneur. I'm like, great. What do you want to do? And they're like, blah, 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 whatever, construction to landscaping to flower business to whatever the case may be. I'm like, perfect. What have you done to start that business? Then cricket.
They thought about the idea, but that's about
and
it.
I was like,
as far as they go.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, well, first, here, write these down. I'm going to give you free resources. And this one's going to show you how to start a business. And this one's going to kind of give you a mentorship on business. And when you get this up and running, you start being a little bit profitable, come back to me. I got a third one that I could connect you with that will help you get to whatever industry you want to get to, whether it's local, state, or government, or if there's a private company that you really have a niche for and you really want to get in their stores or on the website, then talk to me. The best part about the resources, free, 100% free. I never turn a veteran into somebody unless it's free resource, especially starting a business. And I'm always like, hey, if anybody ever tells you that you pay them to go do this, you need to come talk to me and let's figure that out if you really have to pay these people to do something. But free, because starting a business is usually on a shoestring budget.
Yeah. Unless you're coming off of another business or still have another business going that's extremely profitable and you can invest some of those resources into something. Yeah, you're absolutely right. You're dealing with, you know, maybe you had some savings, you know, in the bank and like you're able to survive for the next 6 months or so on, you know, just bare minimum living expenses. But you don't really want to be investing too much money into something that you don't know if in 6 months or a year from now, if that's even going to exist, right?
So exactly.
So you, yeah, free resources are definitely good. Are there any particular resources that you'd want to share with the listeners here to just kind of get some of those resources
out there? Yeah. So I'm based in San Diego. So all my resources are really here in San Diego. If you already have a business up and running, Veterans and Business Network, go check them out. Awesome people. They will connect you to whoever you want to get connected to. The East County Economic Development Center here out here in San Diego. Awesome resource. I mean, they will help you from a business plan to a sales strategy, to marketing, to website, to all that stuff is free. You do one class usually, and then you can get one-on-one training with people who have done this and have real life experience in this.
Excellent.
Another one is SCORE. Go look up SCORE. SCORE is another fantastic, fantastic agency. Also, it's VBOC, Veterans Business Something Center, VBOC. I can't remember the 100% what it stands for. I just know when I see VBOC, I'm like, I know them. I've used them before. And I can get those links for you guys later on so that way you have them.
Yeah, and I'll include all of those links in the show notes too. So like this is a good list of organizations, right? And I think one of the things that's challenging when you're starting a business is just the immense amount of research that you have to do to find resources like this, which is why I wanted to mention some of those things. So, you know, anyone who's out there, especially people in the San Diego area who might be, you know, dealing with some of these more local resources, they're thinking about starting a business. Like that's a lot of work to even figure out where these organizations are, who they are and stuff. If you don't even know that they exist, good luck trying to find them sometimes, right? Like, what are you going to search for if you don't know, you know, the name of the company? Like, Veteran Resources in San Diego, like maybe you'll come up with something, but maybe it won't.
So. Most of the time when I did those searches, it was always like, I'll help you start your business for $5,000.
Yeah.
You know, like $5,000. Like, you know, I'm looking at my wallet, it's like cobwebs, like ain't there either. Like
right.
$5,000 to do that. You know, also another great thing for San Diego or for the California is Disabled Veteran Business Enterprise Certificate. Get certified as a Disabled Veteran Business Enterprise. That's another huge thing you can do. The Veterans and Business Network helps out with that.
Okay.
Also, there's a national one. It's Service Disabled Veteran Owned Small Business. So that's another great one to get to be certified as well. That's how.
Absolutely.
That's how my construction business, when I got certified, that's how a lot of people on the commercial side found me because they put me on the website. So my marketing budget?
Nothing. Yeah.
I spent zero money on marketing starting my business. $0. You know,
right. But to that point, just because you spent $0 doesn't mean that you didn't have to do anything. Like, you still got to get out there, right?
You still
got to do that, right?
There's a personal price to pay. You know,
yes.
You paid with sweat, not with, you know, not with money.
Right. So, exactly.
You know, so I didn't have money going out of my pocket for the marketing, but man, I spent many hours, thousands of hours, actually, probably, at events and talking to people and everything I could get. If it was an event remotely close to whatever I'm doing, I'm driving there.
Yeah, you know, for sure. So that's the hustle mindset that you need to have. But also, I think that mindset that you learned in the military with taking something that maybe you didn't really know anything about, like flying the UAVs. You didn't know anything about that, but you're like, yeah, you know, what the hell? Let's give this a try. You're clearly trainable on a variety of things, right? And so that means that you were able to figure out how to get into the coffee business, get into construction, even though you had a little bit of a background, right? It wasn't your passion. So there's probably still some things that you needed to learn. You know, prior to that, you hadn't really ran a business either. And running a business is not just go out and do whatever the thing that the business does. There's all the administrative stuff. There's payroll, there's accounting, there's the marketing, there's that other stuff. You got to do that stuff. Otherwise, you don't have a business. You have a side thing that you do sometimes, you know?
You hit the nail on the head. I mean, so if I spent 8 hours into the field, that means I need to spend 8 hours on the business side of this. Yeah. And that's a couple hours on the marketing, a couple hours on this. And more importantly, most of that on networking.
Yeah, for sure.
That's probably, if you're going to take away from anything like this, a summer space, actually any business, network. Find groups, find people. You're a veteran, find veteran groups out there. There's a ton of them out there, not just in San Diego, nationwide. It's huge. The network is huge. And then once you start building that network, it's like an ant trip, really. It's just, they just start cross-connecting because then you get so many more people who are like, go check this out, go check this out. 2021 actually became probably my darkest year I've ever had. You know, getting medically retired from the military was pretty dark. I think it kind of set me up for 2021. So I had the business. It was named something different when I first started. It was named Basic Badass Coffee Company. And there's another coffee company called Badass Coffee Light. And they have patents on, you know, Badass Coffee. Even though I talked to, at that time, I had a lawyer, but for my other business, they sent me a cease and desist letter. And my first reaction was like, yeah, well, let me scan my ass, put a couple lips on it and say, kiss it. That was my first reaction. Then I sat down, thought about it. And I was like, yeah, you know what? It's kind of close. That's kind of close to their name. I get it. I'm not trying to play on their goodwill. So then that's how I came up with a red, white, and badass brew. Completely different. Yeah, it has badass in it, but it's completely different. That was kind of like the first thing other than closing my business down, my construction business. Because now I'm like, how I'm going to make income? I just sold my other business, but didn't sell for $1 million, right?
Right.
It didn't sell for very much. So then at the time, it was evident, probably going to lose my house and I'm going to be bankrupt. And so I had to file for bankruptcy. You know, that's stressful enough in life. Now I have that on top of everything else is I'm probably going to end up losing my house because the bank has a deed of trust on my house. So go through the motions of that. August of 2021, my son had a 4.3 GPA starting senior year of high school, decides to get into drugs. And now to a point where he started school, said, fuck school, fuck everything else. And he just wanted to do his own thing. And so I had to make the decision, like my dad had to make the decision. And I said, son, you've got opportunity. You can go to college. You can go do anything you want. You had a 4.3 GPA. Let's get you into some counseling. He didn't work. Failed school. Started bringing some to drunk Tom, and I was like, you can't have this here. I got 3 other kids. You can't have it here. So inevitably, I had to kick him out of the house. So now I've had that kind of looming over my head. A month later, my daughter, oldest daughter, tries to commit suicide. And I found her in the morning, and she took about 400 time. So now I have my daughter who is suicidal and essentially could be dying right here in my hand. So I called 911, got her to the hospital. You know, they gave her all the medicine and stuff to counteract all that. And she pulled out. She is doing okay. Now I have to go. Now I'm have to get her into therapy. I have to get her into some kind of thing. They didn't have the easiest life. You know, their mom wasn't really around. For the last 4 years, I raised them by myself, you know, while trying to start businesses and everything else. So that kind of put a halt on everything I was doing with business. Kind of stopped doing the business entirely because I have a lot of personal issues I have to recover from. It got to the point where I couldn't get up in the morning and think. There's no way I can make rational decisions because of the stress. And then I started going down a very dark road myself. And now I have my two little kids, half the time. And trying to keep everything kind of together almost seemed like an impossible task. It was very dark. I kind of get back in that mindset when I first out of the military is, you know, is life really worth this? You know, my son's not doing well. My daughter just tried to commit suicide. I'm trying to handle a bankruptcy, trying to handle my house not getting foreclosed on, and trying to start a business. I think you take any one of those things, it's stressful. And so it's all happening at once. And if it wasn't for my good friends, I would have had a lot darker of a road. And they were there for me from the rip. I mean, they were looking out for me, essentially. Went back to counseling, started getting help because I was like, I have to get myself in some. So I did, got back on the road. But one of the things that when I first started counseling way back 10 years ago was mindset. Everything goes back to mindset. I woke up negative every morning. So what I did for 21 days straight again was one thing good. Just one thing good. And doing that for 21 days changed my whole mindset, my whole perception. And second thing was, I have to do something for me to take care of myself. I have a lot going on, but I have to do something for me. So what I ended up doing is I got into Krav Maga. So I'm able to release that energy, that negativeness out, and all that, just the bad out. So changing the mindset. And doing something for yourself, it doesn't matter what it is. You know, reading a book, paddleboarding, to hunting, to fishing, to, you know, whatever it is, sewing, whatever your thing is, to make sure you do it. And second is mindset. Change your mindset. Because that's a beautiful thing about the mind, about yourself. You can change it. You know, you can let it run your life. And you can let whatever's going on in your life at that time dictate how you are. So got my daughter into counseling. She started doing great. Doing really well, handled the bankruptcy, got that past me, and ended up saving my home, working it out with the bank, saving my home. And then, unfortunately, my son kind of went down the road he went down, and he's still kind of on the repercussions of that. But all in all, got back to a healthy mindset, got back to where I can actually start focusing not only on my kids, but also back on the business. Because at that point, I let the business kind of petered out. I did a little bit, but then I just stopped. So really about 7 months ago, I started really hitting it hard again. I changed my mindset. And it was like, all right, well, I'm going to do this. Well, at this point, I've run out of funds. I've run out of money. Completely tapped. I have no money. And doing lawyers and everything going on personally, I was like, all right. Ended up landing a job as a director of operations for a solar company. Doing well. In the meantime, I was still doing a little bit on the business side. And I was doing okay. And finally, I went and got to the mindset of, man, I'm making this guy a lot of money. And a lot of money. I turned his business around and he's doing well. And then I was like, you know what? I can't do this anymore. I got to go out there and I'm either going to fail miserably at this coffee business or I'm going to hit the ground and make it successful.
Yep.
So ended up quitting my job as a director of operations and was like, hey, I'm focusing 100% on this and been doing pretty well since I quit my job and like focused 100% on this. Now I'm in a healthy mindset and making a lot better sound decisions, working out every day. So here I am and it's thriving.
You know, and it's a funny thing what happens when you start focusing on certain things and you're like, when you focus on your business, that's what's going to get the improvements, right? And you, so, but that goes with just about everything in your life. If you focused on your mental health, which you needed to at that point in your life, right? You focus on that and hey, look, it started getting better, right? You tried to eliminate as many of the distractions, if you will, that you could, so that you could focus on that stuff. And okay, boom, you got that. Yeah, not to say mental health is, you know, check the box and move on kind of thing. It's one of those evolving type of things, right? But you got it to a point where, okay, now you're good. You can move on and you can focus on that next thing. You don't have to focus 100% on that anymore. So that's, I think all of these, this has been a great conversation, by the way, and it had a lot of great takeaways. I'm excited about having this conversation. But before we wrap this up, because I know we're getting a little long on time here.
All right.
No, it's great. I wish we can, you know, keep going all day. But, you know, I know the listeners also have probably other things that they got going on as well. So I want to, before we wrap up, I do want to give you the chance to tell people about your business, where they can go to find the coffee, follow you on social media, or wherever else that you might be around. If you have local shops that carry your coffee, that would be cool too. But, you know, feel free to, you know, drop some information about the business and where people can go to support it.
Yeah, absolutely. You can find Red White Badass Brew online. It's at www.redwhitebadassbrew.com. You can follow me on Instagram. It's at Red White Badass Brew. You can find it locally in store. You go to my website, go to locations tab, pull that down. You're going to be able to find it where you can buy that current coffee. Also, I'm a wholesaler too. So if you want my coffee in your stores, contact me. I have a little thing on my website where you can contact me for wholesale pricing and I can give you the wholesale pricing. I also do a little bit of white labeling too. So if you have something that you want your brand on my coffee, I can do that as well. That's a different little niche. You got to contact me personally for that and through email. But I'll go on my e-commerce site, order it. I also offer subscriptions. So you can go on there and subscribe and get it delivered whenever you want it delivered. It's very customizable to you specific. And my number one bestseller, it's called Whiskey Business. It's a medium roast, vanilla, caramel, and whiskey flavored coffee. It's really good. It's by far my number one bestseller.
Excellent. Yeah. And so I'll have links to all of this in the show notes, including the links to some of the business resources that you mentioned earlier. So anyone who is looking to check out the business and help support a veteran-owned business, get some great coffee, definitely go check out redwhiteandbadassbrew.com. But I'll have that link in the show notes too. Dustin, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you today. Like I said, I think we probably could keep going and talking all day, but I know you're a busy guy. You got other things going on too. So I won't keep you any longer here, but really it's been great. And I thank you for coming on and sharing your story and your journey with us and how you've been rocking it all these years, right?
It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Drive On Podcast.